This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast. After 1 week off, we are back and added a new podcast coming to you from Rogers Arena. The place still buzzing the morning after one of the most entertaining games of the season, without a doubt. Pretty short list of games when you think of the entertainment value provided over 64 games this season. But there was a bunch going on here last night, and we will get to all of that. So much to get to. Botch, I hope you're comfortable in your chair there, because we could be here a while as we deliver the first podcast in a couple of weeks. It's always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam, proud sponsors of the BCHL Coquitlam Express, and your number one overall pick for selection and inventory. Check them out. The showroom, you can find it at 2595 Barnett Highway, or start your search for a new vehicle or a used vehicle online at eagleridgegm.com. Back at it here. And I don't even know where to begin, but we should say, and look, we appreciate the support. We know that there's so many of you out there that listen to the podcast, and we appreciate all of the feedback, but, you know, sometimes life gets in the way. And so we weren't able to deliver a podcast last week, but of all the times to miss out on a week, oh my goodness.
I can't tell you how many moments I had in the past 10 days where I thought, fuck, like I need to get this off my chest. Like the only place I can really do this is I need a podcast. I need, like, where's J-Pat? Let's get a podcast together. And either you were in Vegas, I had to go back to Toronto for a bit, and we just couldn't make it happen.
Right. And Patrick Johnson, who's the technical guy behind the scenes, he and his wife had a baby, just adding to, you know, so he wasn't available necessarily. So last week didn't happen. The last time you and I did this was the emergency podcast when we showed up at the rink and we, you know, figured out that something was up. And ultimately it was the announcement of Jim Benning's extension. And you just think of all that has gone on since then. And we'll get to Vegas. You weren't on that trip. You're going to be on the next one. So we'll have some fun down there when the Canucks return. But let's just start with the week that was. Because this really, I mean, you and I have been at this for a while. And I can't recall a week like this one. Then the trade deadline was obviously a huge part of it, but really it's more the fallout since the trade deadline that has just kind of set this city on fire.
And me, like, I'm super I'm like so energized right now, and I'm not sure if it's like the positive attitude that some of us were sending out there last night that's made me feel like almost high. Like I'm just like, can't wait to get writing again. I can't wait for the next game. I'm pretty jacked up. And you're right. There's been a lot of reactions. There's been the accusations of negativity, which you and I are, I think the two of us are on the front lines. We're the two guys, I think, are on the front lines of all of it. And I want to declare that I am announcing here on the podcast that I am making a offer to the Vancouver Canucks. And if they are concerned about negative coverage, and I think we both know that they are, and it's natural. We've seen past 4 to 5 seasons, the teams collapse, Canucks teams collapse at the end of the year, and it's tough. It's tough when you get to this point of the season. It's tough for us. It's tough for them. It's tough for everyone. But they're concerned about the negative coverage. So this is my offer to them. I will dedicate 1 week next year, and I'll make it the mid-February week to commemorate Jim Benning's extension celebration. I will make that 1 week of Provies entire, like every game that falls into that week, every item in the Provies will be positive. We'll have a positive outlook on it. And it will be all the games, all the items for 1 week. And all the Canucks have to do, they have to do one thing to get this prize. And it's a hell of a prize. You do one thing. You have to acquire a pick in the first 3 rounds of the 2018 NHL entry draft. If you guys are really worried, and we know that they listen, if you're really worried about negative coverage and you're really concerned about that, you are going to get the most glorious, positive, tire-pumping coverage you've ever seen. Just get us a pick.
And you're right. And we do know that they listen. I think at various levels of the organization, like there may be some gatherings in office rooms or meeting rooms, and they play the hit play over there on the podcast. Let's
get it
going.
Offer up on your office wall. Put it on your office wall. If that doesn't motivate you to get a pick, I don't think anything could.
I got a theory, though, after the events of yesterday with the commission town and the announcement of the draft here at Rogers Arena in 2019. I'm not so sure that much is going to happen ahead of the 2018 draft. Oh, I think this organization is going to load up. I think they're going to have 15 picks at the 2019. Like, it's just going to, they're just going to stand on the podium. Like, you know, the Bruins had those three in a row in the first round a couple of years ago. Like, the Canucks are going to own a round in that 2019 draft at some point. Honestly, I think there's just been so much talk about, you know, the value of picks and this team doesn't understand and they've got to do something. I think you're going to see a show of force. 2019, the home team hosting the draft. Honestly, I think they'll have double digit. I think they will have double digit number of picks in the 2019 draft.
That will get another thing. That will get a lot of positive. I promise you. I promise you right now that will get a ton of positive coverage. How about Gary Bettman? They'll come in here and dunking all over the Canucks. Like, I saw him. I wasn't covering the press conference, but I was in the room when he was there, and I did tweak up. There were a couple times when he mentioned rebuilding teams and rebuild. I thought, man, he's saying that like right beside Linden. Like he knows. And for sure he knows. Like he's plugged into every market. He gets updates on everything that's going on in the NHL, what the media is saying. He's fully aware of everything we're writing and saying and all the struggles that have been going on here. So he mentions rebuild there. And then I see that Sportsnet intermission thing with Murph. Oh, holy shit. Like he lectured Linden and Benning. He wagged his finger and he said, like, he essentially said, you're doing it wrong. You've been doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. Do it like the Rangers. Let's go. And I'll tell you what, I never thought that Gary Bettman would be my hero, but last night he was my hero. I thought that was something to see.
I had trouble just getting past the footwear. You know, here he is, the commissioner of a professional sport in North America, and he's probably wearing a $5,000 suit, and then he's wearing, like, sort of sensible, like, comfort jogging. I don't know what
Seinfeld.
They wore.
That's a Seinfeld look, and that's a guy who gives zero fucks. He gives no fucks what you think. He just slaps. When you're slapping those shoes on with that suit, you give no fucks at all. It was And he did the whole day, like he was doing media everywhere. Like I've never seen him. So maybe all of our negativity in the city, like he landed and he just swallowed it in and it made him like monster Batman because he was doing interviews with everyone. And he did well. Like he did, he was doing well. Everything that I heard, man.
Like just the thought of, all right, who's going to put an end to the negativity? Who's going to be the ray of sunshine? It's Commissioner Gary coming to town, and he's the guy? Like, when you think of the schmarm and just the, you know, I mean, the disdain that you see for him in all of these rinks when he shows up and steps out onto the ice and handing out the Stanley Cup, and people are still all over him, and now he just drinks that up. Like, that's become such a huge part, and he talked about that yesterday, too. Like, you know, he knows that that's a part of the character that he plays. It's unbelievable, but he's the guy that could turn this story 90 degrees, Gary Bettman.
Yeah, and if the Canucks listen to him, and they now execute. Like he absolutely laid out what they need to do, what's been wrong with their messaging, what they need to do next. And if they follow what he said, they first got to talk the talk, then they got to walk the walk. And you're saying like they're going to try to get all these picks in 2019. I'm saying go for a top 90 pick in 2018, get a week of Provi's positive coverage. If they do all of what we're describing, me and you and Batman, this trifecta that we've formed, if they follow what we're saying, they don't have to worry about negative coverage. They are going to be embraced in this city if they can do that.
All right, walk it back a little bit because you were here on trade deadline day. I was dispatched to Denver where nothing and nothing. I mean, the hotel lobby at the Ritz-Carlton in Denver, I can tell you all about it. It's lovely, but there was nothing going on. I sat there forever, it seemed, and ultimately Philip Holm and Thomas Vanek move out. But you were here, and again, I mean, this is kind of where the firestorm, I guess, erupted from. But I listened to that online. And again, I had nothing going on in Denver, so I had the earbuds in. I was listening to the press conference live. I thought the Jim Benning extension press conference was far more heated, more pointed questions then than after the trade deadline.
Yeah, and maybe, like, if I could get Elliot to clarify, maybe that's, like, I was thinking last night, like, maybe that's what he meant, because I've done the same thing. Like, I've asked a bunch of people, not just friends, but people to really give me, you know, in the media, like, give me a breakdown of that trade deadline press conference. Was it that bad? Was it that rough? And I think that everyone that I've talked to has the same kind of reaction. Like, I'm not sure what Friedman was getting at. Like, there were some pointed questions, but there were questions that needed to be asked. It was just me, Double J, and Farhan. Like, it's the most unlikely. Like, if Elliot knew, like, Farhan and Double J and, like, the three of us, if he was here, I don't think that he would have had the reaction that he had. It's like the unlikeliest wild dog triad that I've ever heard of, like the three of us. So I was super surprised to say that he was double taking that presser, and I would suggest to him that he re-listen to his interview with Walker and Rintel, because I think that was, like, I think the world of Elliot. Like, I love the guy. I wrote about it last night. Like, I've forever looked up to this guy. But he was a bit over the top. Like, it was over the top. And I think that if he went back and listened to it and heard himself and heard him cycle back, and, you know, he was asking about a question about Vanek, and he's like, answers a bit of it, then talks about them being under siege and stuff. Like, what are we asking for? We're asking for, maybe they should add a guy to the front office, a wait-a-sec guy. Like, that's what we've said. We've said, hey, maybe it's time to start trading for picks. It's been 3 years. Maybe it's time. We've said that. We're not calling. None of us have demanded anyone get fired. None of us have splashed, you know, Linden incompetent on the front page of the paper. Like, none of this. It's just not that. I don't think that it was, his comments were reflective of the actual tone when you live here. I will say, though, that we heard, I think I first heard maybe a month ago, that there was some concern from the Canucks about the questioning, the coverage, and it was slanting more toward the negative. And they were worried about that, and they were worried about, you know, how players were reacting to that. At the same time, I think that they also under, like, I don't know what your read is of it. At the same time, I think they also understood and could grasp that we're in a tough spot. Like, if the team continues to lose, and it's been the worst team in hockey since, you know, the third week of November, like, that's a long time. That's a lot of losing. And it becomes really difficult for us to find, like, you know, the good time stories. And I'm telling you, we do look for this stuff. I don't want to be going in there asking shitty, why'd you lose questions all the time. There's been lots of times, or there have been times, when you and I have said, like, look, we don't want to talk to the city. Let them go. Let them have the night off. Like, we do, this is part of our process and the jobs we do. We do think about this. Like, we do value it. And, you know, we do worry about it, and we try to find way. I don't want to always be doing negative stories, so I do look for the sunshine here and there.
Right. And I have made this point repeatedly this week. Like, you think last year when the bottom was falling out, like, at this time last year, the Canucks had one win over their final, whatever it was, 10 or 11 or 12 games. Like, there was nothing good going on. It was a death march to the end of Willie's tenure here. And there was nothing positive in the way they were playing, the entertainment value. And you think of the stories on Horvat and his emergence, Stetcher as a rookie defenseman, Trampkin. Like, we just couldn't praise Trampkin. Ryan Miller. Like, we knew he was leaving. He couldn't get out of here fast enough, but we couldn't say enough good things. Right. And, you know, a night like last night, it takes you back to Ryan Miller and really just how well he performed for the Vancouver Canucks over his 3 years here. Like, there was, I mean, Tuesday, Jim, like, again, like, sometimes I thought, man, like, we're going overboard with good news stories for a team that just sucks so bad. And then this year with Besser, like, we have just gushed about Brock Besser, and rightly so.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, you never hear about that stuff. Like, it's just this big, bad negative media. And to your point about, you know, giving the Twins a pass on some nights, and we have done that. Like, how many nights have you and I left the press box, taken the elevator down, and looked at each other and said, what the fuck are we going to ask tonight? Like, I'm saying that's in double digits because so many of those losses look and feel the same. And, you know, sure, there's 20 guys in uniform, but really it's a pool of about 8 or 10 that we talk to with regularity, right? There's just a handful of guys that...
Not Louis.
Yeah.
Not Louis Erickson.
Right. So it is, it does fall on the same guys an awful lot, and that's why I think it's important to, some nights when the Twins don't have an impact on the game, good or bad, you know, give them the night off. They're standing there because that's what they always do, but I think it's important to, because it would be a grind, like 64 nights to have to answer the same thing and try and put a spin on it. And so I think, you know, again, and that's the other thing. Like, you talked about you and Jay and Farhan. I'm just having this vision of, like, this organized crime syndicate that left the building here and just started rolling people in, you know, Wilding in downtown Vancouver. But out on the road, a lot of time, it's you and me and Bachelor or Murph. Or, like, there's three of us post-game. Right, right. Like, it's not this, you know, just this mob mentality. Like, it's three guys asking hockey questions to a hockey player. Like, how bad can it get?
Yeah, I think the idea, the imagery that it's the pack of wolves tearing people apart is just, it's just not the truth. And if you're here and you're living it, you see it. Like, there's a few of us that go to all the games and ask most of the questions. There's not a lot of us. It's not like 15 of us. It's not like the old days when I looked down press row and there'd be like 9 people there representing both of the newspapers in the city. Most nights, it's one guy representing both newspapers in the city. So things are a lot different. I think the so-called negativity, you have to come from the starting point that the team has been bad. It's been this bad for 3 straight years.
And really 4 of 5, because you go back to Torts' year, like the Willie's first year was the outlier, and even that year ended so crappily in the playoffs that it set the tone for what was to come, that even in the good year, you know, it didn't end very well. So really, it's a 5-year run.
Like, yeah. And there are others to read and others to listen to who have different perspectives. I think that the media here is very varied. I think that you get all sides represented really well. And I think that if you take some time and you really think about it and you read IMAC and you read me and you read others, you will see that all sides of the story are covered and covered, I think, really effectively to me. Like, I think that all in all, considering the numbers we have, the Vancouver media does a good job in covering the team and presenting all the different sides of what's going on at any one time. Now, I look at other cities and I see a lot more cozy relationships with management. And maybe that's why the coverage looks different if you're sitting there in Toronto and you're looking at Edmonton, you're looking at Calgary, because this is a reality that there are coaches and there are GMs around the NHL that have their guy, and their guys or guys in the media. Like, that is just, that's a truth. And there's like this great story, old story, about when Keenan got here and he wanted to make Gallagher his guy. And he said, I want you to be my guy. And then Gallagher said, no, I'm not going to do that. I tend to think, like, if I were to look at all the markets, all the big markets in hockey, I tend to think there's, and I wrote about this last night in the Provies, I tend to think that there's a bit of an anti-authority lean here. You know, I can see that I have that. And I think that some others do. And there's more of, I don't know if the coach knows what he's doing here. And is the GM, are you sure you know what you're doing? Like, there's more second guessing of these guys, because I think here, as I was saying earlier, the GMs and the coaches around the league have their guys. I think it's less prevalent here in Vancouver than it is in other cities. That would be my take.
And my look on, you know, sort of why this firestorm erupted now was sort of four-pronged approach, if you will. Jim's extension, it wasn't popular in all corners in this market. There were a lot of people that thought this organization needed to move in a different direction. And to hear Jim that day, and Trevor sat there with him, and we talked the last time we did one of these, but, I mean, they looked beleaguered and kept talking about just doing things the right way, and yet the right way hasn't led them out of the forest for 3 years.
The no change thing on that day, like, we're not changing anything. That was really hard to hear.
So there was the reaction to that. Then the Good Branson extension. I mean, Jim's first order of business is to give one of the most polarizing players in this city in a long time this extension that so many people wanted them to move from.
And this happens just before the deadline, and that's your biggest piece to trade at the finally we're sitting here in Vancouver at a deadline where you do have a piece that other teams covet, and he was expendable. They would have been fine without him. They would have been fine without him. He was expendable, and instead of trading him, they doubled down on him almost on the eve of the trade deadline.
Right. So you've got the Benning extension. Now you've got the Gudbranson contract. And what people didn't see here was, and we talked about Jim and Trevor at that Jim Benning extension, you know, that was the heated one to me.
Right.
So a week later, when they announced the Gudbranson extension, instead of Jim sitting at the podium and holding another press conference, he elects to talk to the media in a series of one-on-one interviews. It was a big cattle call lineup. Like, Kuz was in there, and IMAC was in there. Farhan got one. I think TV got one. I was in line, and then I was told Jim had to go to a meeting, and I got my chance just before game night or game time, whatever night that was. The games all kind of run together, but I did get my one-on-one that day. And again, like a week before the trade deadline, like a GM's got to have better use of his time, I think, than, you know, sitting there to do one-on-one after another. But I don't think he had the appetite to sit in front of the pack of wolves again.
Right.
And so that kind of was bizarre. Just something that we haven't really ever seen in, you know, for a play. Again, it's a depth defenseman guy. Like, he could have just been a quick scrum, few answers, and away you go.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there was that, and then there was the trade deadline, and through all of that was also, you know, the losing that culminated in that night in Carolina with Markstrom sounding off, and, you know, it was kind of a low point of the season for the hockey club, and I just think that really this two-week stretch kind of all came to a head with this idea that, you know, the negativity's out of control here.
Right. And there were other things to add to this. For example, Jim saying on hockey night, we're looking for a big, tough forward. And then he ends up getting two shrimps. Like, I got no problem with Leipzig. I got no problem with, like, the trades were fine. They totally were fine. I'm not going to lose my shit over those trades. They were fine. But he did say, we're chasing a big, tough forward. And then the next day, Kuz goes up to him and says, like, what did you mean by that? And that, to me, was probably among the most troubling interviews of all of them, because then he says, we're looking for hockey trades. We want players, which, you know, and he outlined it, like, there's some crazy, like, not crazy, but it's unusual quotes for a rebuilding team. And a team that supposedly had this new direction when they announced rebuild in April of 2017. Now they're chasing players, and that dovetailed with Jim saying at the presser that, you know, getting prospects and draft picks is going to be really difficult. Teams have learned from their mistakes of previous years. They're going to be like gold this year. And then we all watch this rainstorm of picks just crash down on Vancouver. Like, it's one of those heavy, like, January rainfalls where it rains. It felt like it was like 20 straight days of draft picks being traded. It was like every time I looked on Twitter, it was like another second rounder goes and a third over here and two firsts just went that way. And it's like, holy fuck, like, gold is everywhere. This is bananas. And Jim just said no one can get picks. And he just said, I'm not interested in them anyway. I want hockey trades. And then the further gut punch is IMAC comes out with a column and says they never would have traded for picks for Gudbranson. They wanted a player for him, and picks don't matter. And all of those things just help this volcano just like burst and bubble. And it's just like, holy shit. Like, are you never going to, like, you haven't traded for a top 90 pick in 3 years. You just announced you're not looking for picks. You're looking for hockey trades. IMAC is writing that if Gudbranson was dealt, you wouldn't even chase picks. Like, what the fuck is going on here? So that very much was the reaction and the reasons for it, and not, like, I keep hearing people say, why are the fans so mad that they didn't get a third for Vanek? No, don't you understand? No one wanted him. Yeah, I fucking get that. I totally get it, man. Believe me. I've been saying that from day one. Anyone could have had him in August. He was sitting there in September. He's not going to be worth much. But why is the team not prioritizing draft picks? Okay. And so the trade deadline goes down. They end up doing exactly what Jim said they were going to do. They made hockey trades. And then everything has seemed to flip in that moment, because then they said, like, no, we were trying to get picks. And I listened to Trevor yesterday we were talking about earlier, it's 2019. He says, like, draft picks are super important. Everyone zeroed in on draft and the draft. And I'm like, where am I living? Like, this is, am I crazy? Like, why is it like, I'm speechless. I don't even know what, like, when I think back at all the shit that's happened over this past 10 days and all the different messages and I've heard, like, it's just, it's super confusing. It is really confusing.
Right. And I think my take on, like, the frustration here in the city amongst the fan base, and I can't speak for all fans, but is that, like, we're at a point in time where fans and media are armed with more information than ever before. You know, you see the salary cap, cap friendly or whatever website you want to use. You can see, like, how to go about building teams and, you know, the building blocks that are in place and all that kind of stuff is out there now. And so there are some very astute fans. There's lots of guys in the media that do have a pretty good handle on what's going on. And so all of this has been presented to this management group. We sat and we listened to them talk about doing things the right way. And yet there are so many people that, you know, think the right way is 180 degrees the other way. And so they trade away the pick with Pedan to get Pouliot. So now they're down, you know, from their allotted 7. So it's not like they don't even have the full amount. And yet they have shown no ability and really no interest in going above and beyond. And so, right. You know, you have asked that question a couple of times. You asked it at Jim's extension press conference. I heard it again after the press conference, after the trade deadline, you know, about the value of, and people are trying to give him so much credit and praise for being the draft guy. Like, that's, I think, where the frustration is truly born.
Yeah, no, exactly. That all of this ignites from a really positive headspace. Like, you've done a great job drafting, dude. Why do you not want more draft picks? Like, then it's a paradox that I have not been able to wrap my head around. The whole thing is very confusing, and so is their commitment, Lyndon and Bennings, to this group. Like, why are these guys so important? Like, why is Gudbranson so important? Like, why is, we can't trade Tanev. We don't want to trade Berchi. We don't want to trade Sutter. Like, why? I don't, like, the team's been awful for 3 years. Like, your plan, the stated plan essentially is to be competitive, have a shot at the playoffs, even though, like, Bettman said that this is the wrong plan. He did. The Canucks' plan is to be competitive, and it's totally, like, these guys have let you down every step of the way. Why are they so loyal to them? I don't get it.
And it's funny. I mean, we're at a point now, too, where, you know, the kind of things that are being done in social media spaces just didn't exist 2 years ago, 5 years ago, certainly not 10 years. Like, think of the Mike Keenan era with social media around. Like, you know, but the most savage, I think, right now, sort of attack on this management group is the guy doing the Jim Benning videos. And on one level, they are funny. Like, I have to admit, like, I do chuckle, but they're savage. Like, they are absolutely cutting to the core, leaving no, like, they're sparing no expense, like, in the biting commentary that he's producing.
Yeah, but it is super entertaining. We need, like, if the Elliot Friedman saga this week has proven anything, like, we need some distractions. We need some entertainment. Benning and the Jets is definitely providing that entertainment. Friedman, like, he single-handedly has saved Canucks. Like, it's been a long time since I've had as much fun in the past few days with Canucks Twitter, since Friedman said his comments. So he's kind of helped save the season, and Benning and the Jets is helping save the season, because there was, like, it does wear you out. The losing is exhausting. If that's all you're focused in on all the time, it it wears. Like, obviously it wears on the players and it wears on us too, because we're out there covering them. So yeah, these things are great distractions, for everyone. He does an amazing, like, I don't, he told me, I'm like, how the hell did you get that voice? Because, like, there's some kind of AI technology they call deep fake, where they're able to, where people are able to use, like, celebrities' faces. Apparently it's really popular in the porn industry. Like, they slap, like, celebrity, like, Kristen Bell's face on some porn star. So he's, as far as I can see, uses this deep fake technology to create a Benning-esque image, but you got to nail the voice, and he absolutely nails the voice. And he said he was just messing around, like, in the locker room with his hockey team, and he realized, holy shit, I can do an amazing Benning. Like, it's pretty great.
That's the guy you want on your team. Like, he's doing stand-up comedy before the game, between periods. But he's all in. Like, he came down outside Rogers Arena on trade day. Like, he could have done it in his bedroom. Yeah, he could have done this thing in his bedroom or at the local rink or whatever. He came down. Like, you could see the Rogers Arena sign in the background. I saw the one yesterday where he thought that they had reacquired Bieksa instead of Biega. No, like, again, like, it's biting. It is savage, but it's pretty funny stuff. The podcast is a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. It's March 1st. Wow. Like, there's 5 weeks left in this season, 18 games to go. March is truck month at Eagle Ridge GM. Get up to $11,000 total value on the largest selection of Silverados and Sierras in stock. Go to eagleridgegm.com for full details. And I should have mentioned this right off the top, but we've got a live podcast recording next week. Uh-oh. We'll get some details. Don't be frightened. We're moving from the car dealership. Eagle Ridge has been terrific to us, and we've done a couple of live podcasts there. But we're moving on, and you got to stick around, because we'd love to have people come out and be a part of the taping of the PatCast next Thursday night. It's an off night. It's a night between games for the Vancouver Canucks as they wrap up their 5-game homestand. So hang around. You'll get more details there, and hopefully we'll be able to have some fun with that. And fun was the name of the game in here last night. Like, let's be honest. The Canucks lose. It's another loss. But it was unlike just about any other game that we have seen this season. Well, it looked a lot like a lot of games when they were down 3-0, 12 minutes into the hockey game.
Yeah.
Not sure I saw the comeback coming. But again, like, it's about the kids. It's about playing them in all situations. Travis Green, I thought, did a pretty good job of that last night. And, you know, again, for me, the takeaway was, it was entertaining.
Yeah, and then, look, I realized they weren't playing a great team, but at this, if Willie was in charge at this point of the season, the Canucks, he would have the Canucks curling up into the fetal position, into a little ball, and hiding in their end of the ice. They would be passive, they would be boring, they would be defensive, and like, you were going at Green last night about, like, you sure you like the way your team played? I just wanted to reach over and I wanted to say, like, shut up. Okay. That was fun.
I think he wanted to reach over and say that too.
Do not question when his team plays like that. We need to stand up there. We need to channel our best Elliot Friedman positive vibes and send them to Travis Green's way. And we need to say, Travis, that was a super exciting style of play. Can you do that some more, please? Not you're questioning about whether he was happy with the defensive side of things. I don't really care for the defensive side of things. I'm stunned right now that they're going to double down on this defense, that they've re-signed Gudbranson, that they're bringing back Biega, that looks like they're going to bring back Pouliot. Maybe they make a change with Hutton, but it looks right now like the same defense. That gets me depressed. What does not get me depressed is the way the team was flying last night. Lundqvist thought there was like 25 scoring chances in that game. He was making miraculous save, five-alarm save after five-alarm save. He was incredible. The Canucks were great. They were fun. And I hope if you find it in your heart to pull Travis aside and say, like, look, I was offside with my questioning last night about your defensive game. It actually looked really good. All the goals were flukes. It won't happen again. It's very unlikely you're going to get beat by five again playing like that. Keep it going, Travis.
Your accounts and mine differ somewhat in the goals that they surrendered. But, no, as I said, it was fun. Absolutely, it was fun. I had said before the game, like, again, given the climate right now and this, you know, the attack on the organization, they needed something from Brock Besser. He delivered not once, but twice. That looked like December Brock Besser.
The shot was there.
I mean, he picked his corner. He didn't have much to, I mean, the play that he makes to take the puck on the backhand and then pull it around the defenseman with time ticking down. Like, again, that's just special stuff that we haven't seen in a while. So Besser was doing his thing. And, you know, we're at that point where a lot of people say, like, I don't care if they win. If Besser scores, that's a win for me. And so for Besser to get two, he's up to 29. Like, he's back. He's back again. And that's a huge development for the Vancouver Canucks. Horvat has been on a mission since he returned from the ankle injury. He was good before the injury, but he looks like a guy that is intent on making up for lost time right now. And then you throw Leipzig on that line. Like, again, sign me up for the final 18 if they play anywhere close to what they did last night. Goldie scores a goal, had a couple of moments. The fact that, and I asked, it wasn't all bad for Travis postgame, because I said, when you pulled the goaltender, like, Daniel Sedin's on his best run of goal scoring in like 8 years or something. And Daniel and Henrik were on the bench with the goaltender pulled, and they went with Horvat and Besser and Leipzig and Berchi, who isn't a kid anymore, but still, you know, we consider him part of the young group. Like, I like that. That much I liked.
I'm not sure the Sedin's like that, but I'm glad glad you're happy about that. It's great. Like, he made decisions that I'm not sure he would have made a couple of months ago, like putting, he didn't have to wait for practice to put Leipzig and Mott into the game. Surprise, surprise. Guess what? When he likes the players, he doesn't have to wait for practice for them to play. That's a little inside information for you right there. And he not only puts Leipzig in, he puts them on the top line, and Leipzig delivered. That pass that he made off his backhand to Besser to tie the game in the final minute, that would have been ridiculous if Vanek did it. Like, it was a fantastic play. And he made a one on the power play with the fake shot, the cross ice feed to Goldobin. Another pretty play. How good is Vegas? That, like, if he's really that good as he look, like, Vegas must be insane that they couldn't find a spot for him. That team must be too deep.
We'll talk about Vegas coming up here in a sec, but just to last night. And look, there's 18 games to go, and the evaluation will continue, and it was a terrific debut for Leipzig. He had his two assists, had the chance to win it in overtime, and wouldn't that have been something? I think maybe the only thing that would have topped it was Besser getting the hat trick in overtime to win it. But no, it was a good night for Leipzig. But for a guy who was billed as an energy guy and who had a relationship with Travis Green going back to junior, you knew he was going to come firing out of a cannon in his first game. So, you know, great debut, but I think tomorrow night against Nashville and many of the remaining games will be a better indication sort of, you know, where he is and what he ultimately can do for this hockey club.
Well, he's got two things going for him, though. Green likes him. That's huge. I think that we're learning that that's a really important factor in how much you play. He gets to play with Brock Besser. And as long as those two things are the same, and Horvat, like, as you point out, like, I've written about this a couple of times, but I do think it's underplayed how ridiculous it is that Horvat missed his 7 weeks of the season and he came back, had a practice and one skate, came back, had a so-so game in his first, and then from there has been as good as he's ever been, maybe better. Like, I think he's come back better from taking that 7 weeks off. I'm super, like, it's got me kind of wondering, like, how good can he be next year, like, in another entire summer of him progressing, because he's making plays. They all haven't led to goals. And Travis mentioned last night, he doesn't really see Bo as this incredible playmaker, and it's true, but he is making more plays than I've ever seen from him before. It's not entirely reflected in the amount of assists he has so far this season. I think he's got 16 or something assists, 17 assists on the year. But man, you can just tell by watching him. He's thinking the game in a way that he hasn't been before. So if Leipzig continues to play with those two guys, it's going to look pretty good.
Yeah, I was quite shocked, frankly, to hear Travis Green on all of the nights that he could have said it to say, I don't think of Horvat as a playmaker. That pass he makes to Besser on Besser's first goal is insane. Across the seam, onto the stick, like against the grain. Like, that was a playmaker's play.
Absolutely, and I've seen plays like that recently that haven't led to goals, but he's feeling it, and he's definitely seeing the ice in a tremendous way. And I'm not sure, like, I still don't get how, like, he told me that, and I brought it up here before, but after those 7 weeks, he tested, his physical tests were better after that than they were when he came to training camp. And I just, it's pretty incredible that he was able to do that. And with Besser, like, he's never going to cop to that wrist injury, right? Like, he's just not, like, I was going at him pretty good last night about it, basically going, dude. And he'd be like going, no, nothing's changed. And I'd be like going, dude. He's like, no, nothing. And he'd have this big smile. You could tell early, like, there was a couple shots early in that game where I was like, okay, it's on, it's back. And that was before he scored any goals.
Right, because there was a point there a couple of weeks ago where, like, he had that thing wrapped, like, you see offensive linemen who are able to play, but they've got that club that, you know, like, that it wasn't quite to that extent, but like, it was extensively taped, and you knew that it was bugging him. And you're right. I mean, there was a game in here.
The overtime shot he had.
Before the road trip, though, before this last road trip, right. There was a game twice where he circled out high, and his shot kind of looked like a Sam Gagne shot, right? Like, there was just nothing on it. And that wasn't the Brock Besser that we've watched all season long. And last night, again, kind of looked like December Besser. He meant business. And they were both great goals, goal scorers' goals. But that second one, again, I mean, under duress with the clock going down, they needed a goal. And the play that he made, like, that was, to me, you know, I still like the Toronto goal when he knocked the puck out of midair on the clearing attempt. I mean, there have been 29 goals. There have been a lot of great ones to pick from. But just some of the subtle things that he does. And I put that one there last night to be able to put, I mean, I love the goal he scored on Carey Price when he stared Price down, and Price basically was on top of him in that game in December, and he still just ripped it past him. So welcome back, Brock Besser. Fan base certainly will take that, and the organization will as well. Did you think Hutton looked like a guy who was a little more relieved that the trade deadline had come and gone? Like, he played, I don't know, that's freer than I've seen Ben Hutton play in the last little while.
Yeah, he had space to skate. He was making plays. He had a couple, like, really nice plays leading up to the Besser's first goal, keeping the puck in. I'm not sure that he's ever going to get, do you happen to see what he ended up playing? I know Vertanen only ended up with 10 minutes, which,
I think that was 16.
Yeah, like, that's not enough. Come on. Like, just let them, like, I have full trust that Travis Green knows what he's doing with Jake Vertanen. Like, I think, honestly, I'm convinced that Travis Green is the guy, that if anyone is going to get the most out of Vertanen, it's going to be Green. Still, play the man. Play. This is my anti-authority media stance right now, players friendly. Give the guy some minutes, man. It's 18 games left. Get him on the power play. Let the horse run. Stop worrying about it. He brought it up yesterday about his little mistakes. Like, no one cares. Just let him play, man. Like, let's see. You can harness him. You can pick, you know, harness him later, harness him at the beginning of the next year, worry about it in preseason. Just let him run and gun and go wild and try to give him a week. Here's my deal. Give him a week. Give him a week with 18, 19 minutes every game where you're not worried about the little mistakes and let him try to figure it out.
Honestly, I'm quite enthused going back to the Vegas game when Vertanen found himself on a line with Gagne and Berchi. Like, if that's a third line or maybe in a fourth line in Travis Green's mind, but, like, that's a modern-day sort of fourth line, and there's lots of component parts. And, look, it's been a struggle and a disappointing season overall for Gagne, and he was hurt, missed the 6 games. But since he's come back, like, he was good in Colorado the other night, had a bunch of chances. I thought that line was maybe the best in Vegas. I like the look of that. Like, I'd like to see a little longer run with that line, so I'm with you. Like, let them play, and hopefully Vertanen can make the most of it. But, again, like, now's the time for experimentation. Like, power play, absolutely. And why wouldn't you try him as a penalty killer, too? Like, a guy that skates that well, can they teach him? I know it's about read and react, and maybe the hockey IQ at times is called into question, but, look, the results don't matter now. Like, a guy that skates that well, like, why wouldn't you want to try Jake Vertanen as a penalty killer?
No, his speed bails him out of a lot of different situations, and I think that's why he's been so successful in his career so far, in staying on the right side of the possession numbers, being able to keep his head above water. Rarely do you see, like, that giveaway from Henrik, which leads to the breakaway. Like, there's been a lot of times sloppy play from the Sedins this season, which have led to, like, eye-popping rush chances against. You rarely see opposing teams ever get chances like that with Vertanen on the ice.
We talked about Hutton for a sec. I thought, and we've discussed the lack of offense from this Canuck blue line, you know, ad nauseum for the last couple of seasons, and nothing has changed again this year. But I thought last night sort of drove that point home. I mean, goals were going in all over the ice. Canucks score five. They don't score five in games very often. So five goals, and they got 1 point. It was a secondary assist for Derek Pouliot on Goldobin's goal. The Rangers blue line that has been completely blown up. Like, I sit here, I can't even name four. Like, I got Brady Shea and Mark Stahl, and then there were some other guys. One of the other guys scored the winning goal in overtime, and the Rangers got 4 points from their, like, no-name blue line last night. Like, it is incredible how little this Canuck team gets offensively from the back end.
Oh, man, and I was feeling so positive there. We're talking about the future of Virtanen. We're talking about Besser. You had me amped up and feeling that positive high, and then you got to bring me down thinking about this defense coming back again next year. Why are they doing it? Why are they so in love? Like, I don't know if I can go through another season of watching this defense. There is no one on this blue line who's got a half, an even average NHL defenseman's shot. I don't know how the hell Gudbranson nailed 103 miles per hour at the super skills. Like, that's Sammy Salo territory. I've never seen in a game. I've never thought ever in a game watching Gudbranson that, holy shit, like, what a shot. That's like Sammy Salo. Like, it's never happened. Like, these guys, it's just muffin after muffin after muffin. And maybe, like, Edler used to have a decent shot. He doesn't anymore. Stetcher is okay. Like, even Stetcher says his whole life people have made fun of his shot. He may have the best among the blue liners.
But to your point then of, you know, the extension for Gudbranson, and yesterday, you know, 2 years for the Bulldog, and we all love the Bulldog. Like, he's one of the really good guys that I have been around in my years covering the Vancouver Canucks. And talk about a guy that gets it and understands his role and wants to play more, but he accepts that being a good teammate is a big part of what he's about. But, like, was there going to be this long line of teams around the block on July 1st for the Bulldog that you had to commit 2 years? Like, Jim has sat there, his extension press conference and trade deadline the other day, and he referenced Brisebois. Again, I heard Brisebois reference. Chatfield. They've already got rid of Holm. Like, Subban and Holm were the two offensive guys in the system at the minor league level,
right,
and they've been jettisoned. Yeah. Now there's nothing, and those two guys, Chatfield and Brisebois, don't profile as offensive guys at all, and yet the Bulldog comes back for 2 years. Like, and in February, like, I don't get the timing, and I don't get the term on that deal for Biega.
No, it makes more sense to me to sign him on a one-year deal. And if someone gets hurt and he gets a lot of playing time and he looks good, use him as a piece at next year's trade deadline to try to get 2018 picks. But now you've got me, like, you've kind of got me thinking that their focus is for trying to get picks for the 2019 draft. So then if that is true and they're going to get these 15 picks for 19, then the 2 years kind of makes sense that they're looking to deal Biega at the 2019 trade deadline.
But he'll still have a year left on his deal. Like, he won't be a rental at the 19 deadline. Like, we're past the 18 deadline. So, no, they're locked in. The Bulldog, he can look for a home here in Vancouver. Like, he's got security now.
I don't think he gets enough money. I don't think even Bulldog gets enough money for that.
Well, we can talk. Maybe you can rent my basement or something. You can do a little better than that. But, yeah, it was just curious. And it kind of took me back to last year where they re-signed Jason Megna before the season was done. Like, it was at a game here where they announced they had re-signed Jason Megna. And I was like, what in the world? Like, he'll be available on July 1st. Like, you've got months here to figure out your organizational plan. Like, why was the... You don't need Jason Megna locked up on this day. And I just kind of had those thoughts yesterday with the Bulldog. And I like Biega a whole lot more as a player than I do Jason Megna. So it was curious timing.
Yeah, and it is the little things. And if that does impact them at next year's trade deadline, and he admitted, I was talking to him about this yesterday, and he said, yeah, he's aware that teams have called on him here in trade deadlines, that he's been in Vancouver. And I've seen some of the players that were moved around the NHL, and Biega's better than Holm, and Holm look at the guy that Holm got them. Holm got them Leipzig. So so I would assume that Biega would have value. I have no answer. I don't know the 2 years. It doesn't make any sense to me why.
You know, this time last year, there were expansion draft implications and those types. Like, none of that. None of that, unless somehow they think that Seattle's going to be up and running. And, again, I don't think that they're thinking that far out. So, anyway, I mean, good for the Bulldog. But if it means that, well, all defensemen on the roster now are club-controlled. So, again, to me, that's just another couple of dots that are leading. So Tanev's got to be on his way, because if they bring back the same defense for another year, it's going to lead to exactly the same thing. And like, Pouliot might have a little room to develop his offensive game. I'm not so sure about Hutton. I don't know about Stetcher. Edler is past his best, not, you know, I mean, he can still play, but his best years are behind him now. And so Tanev is the only logical move.
Yeah,
for this, because Hutton's not going to get much of a return if they trade him. So if they are truly looking to shake up this blue line and give it a new look, then it's got to be Tanev.
Oh, man, I hope that they don't chase. Well, you know, so what are they going to do? They're definitely open to the idea for the first time that I can remember to trading Tanev. In fact, Tanev and his people have been saying, like, yeah, you know what, this could happen. Could happen before the draft. And I've also heard that the Canucks expect to be active. I mean, this is no surprise. They expect to be active in free agency, but they could be focusing in on a defenseman there. So that, to me, is a better alternative than trying to force feed a Tanev trade to get a guy back who's younger but could replace him in the lineup. I'd rather, like, if the Tanev trade goes down, I don't want to see that same thing we were talking about earlier where they had to get a player for Gudbranson. Like, get the best. Don't worry about getting a player. Don't worry about getting a certain position. Get the best package you can get, and hopefully it's a package that includes a first-round pick and futures.
Well, if Tanev goes, I mean, it leaves a huge hole on the blue line. There's no doubt. But we have seen, you know, he's been out of the lineup so much this year that they've kind of, you know, they've learned to live without him. And obviously, a night like last night is another good indication. Like, the 5 goals, fun. The 6 at the other end, you know, goaltending's, no, but, and look, Jacob Markstrom was really good in Arizona, and I get that it was Arizona, but for him to go back-to-back, altitude, team was at the end of just a hellacious stretch. I think it was 11 games and 21 nights in Denver. He was really good in Denver, too. And that's the frustration, because it looked like maybe he had taken a step forward here, and then you get the first 12 minutes of last night, and you're right back to square one with these goaltenders.
Yeah, and it's been a weak spot for the team. It's been a below average point, but you know, it's all interconnected. It does circle back to the defense. The reality is the defense hasn't been good. The defense has let down these goaltenders on lots of occasions, and there have been lots of times when it's gone the other way too, but it does bring me back to that sense of, like, why do you want to double down on this defense? And you're right. Like, trading Chris Tanev is going to make it worse. There is going to be more pain if you do something like that. But as Bettman said, and I feel like I'm going to be quoting this guy a lot, be transparent. Tell the fans there is pain, and tell them that there's a long-term plan in place. And you do all those things, and I'll be just fine with it.
A few more minutes here on the PatCast as we get back at it after a week away. And part of that week away included my first trip in the National Hockey League and the Canucks' first trip in the National Hockey League to Vegas. You weren't on this junket. You will be on the one later on this month, so you'll get to experience it yourself. But it was something. Like, the fact that it fell on a Friday night for the Canucks' first ever visit, the number of people, I flew on the Thursday morning, and I have mentioned this on the radio a couple of times, but like, I went to the airport, I had an 8:30 flight, kind of minding my own business, and I was just sitting there in the departure gate, and I look up, and like, it's nothing but blue and green. Like, there are hundreds of Canuck fans on the Thursday morning, and Like, I ran into guys that I hadn't seen in years. Two guys on two separate teams, beer league teams, the whole beer league team, they were going down for the Vegas weekend. It was a tournament, but they were making a weekend of it with the Canuck game as part of the focal point. A couple of couples that I knew that were going down for the weekend, and they were going to the hockey game as well. It was unbelievable. And I have to say, the number of people at YVR and even the Vegas airport as a baggage claim, Twitter followers, podcast listeners. Like, I had so many people come up to me and tell me, like, oh, man, we love the podcast. Like, where's this week's podcast? Where's Botch? Like, it was unbelievable. The feedback was terrific. Met all kinds of people that that claim they listened to it. And I had one guy at YVR. And, like, again, it was a big plane, and the departure gate was crowded. And this guy, like, he's jumping over people and seats. J-Pat! J-Pat! He pulls out his phone. I'm like, am I looking at pics? Like, what are you going to show me here? And he's like, yeah, we got this WhatsApp chat group, and we're using the flat J-Pat as the icon or the avatar. Like, this is a bunch of grown men, and they've used the flat J-Pat as the pic with their group chat.
Man, I saw, it looked like a lot of fun. I heard Sakaris and Price did their show there with Gilman. And the report I got, like, it was a big party. Like, there was a lot of people that were on hand for that.
I was surprised. I went to the game day skate, and as I just walked the strip from my hotel to get to T-Mobile, like, the number of Canuck fans in jerseys just on patios having brunch at, like, 10 in the morning gave me an indication, like, all right, the plane trip yesterday, the day before, I had a pretty good hint. And then game day itself, and I got reports, like, when I tweeted out, like, my plane is full of Canuck fans, I got all these, like, tweets back, you know, and people are at me like, we're coming tomorrow, there's 30 of us, you know, coming tomorrow, like, wait, like, you know, it was unbelievable. So yeah, so they had their live on location, and like, the weather wasn't great. Like, it was kind of cold for Vegas. The Vegas people kept apologizing for the weather, like, it's February, like, whatever, you know, yeah. It's out of your
man, it's not raining, that's
it's out
all
of your
we
control, right? And we're getting these stories of this salacious snowstorm back home, like, right. Don't worry, we can deal with, like, you know, 60 degree Fahrenheit weather, it's okay. But they did this live on location at an Irish pub on the strip out front of New York, and you know, they're on the air starting at 3, and I made my way over there around 4. And when I got there, a couple hundred people probably, many of them in Canuck jerseys, and it just built from there. Like, it was a street party for the Canucks. And then the game itself, like, I got into the rink pretty early. I wanted to see warm up. Like, the Canucks are so far from the playoffs, and yet it had sort of that playoff feel where, you know, there were probably, I don't know, certainly several hundred, if not close to 1,000 people, like, lining the glass in the Canucks end for warm up. Right. And warm up in Vegas, like, the game presentation there was off the charts. Like, it was exactly what you would expect. I just thought, like, the music selection, like, Delzato, I'm surprised didn't demand a trade, like, just hide in a hockey bag or a closet and just stay there. Like, no, the music was, you know, and you know me and music, but like, for a hockey game on a Friday night, like, you know, it was 12 on the 1 to 10 scale for volume. Place was just thumping for the warm up. And I just thought Vegas, I thought they did a terrific job of game presentation, and their fans were into it, and because they win every game on home ice too. But it was a good game. Like, it was the first period, I thought the Canucks were into it. They were game. And it was just a lot of fun. And so I'm really curious to see, because when we go back, it's a Tuesday night. So it'll be a little different than a Friday, I would imagine. But I would think that, like, just the word of mouth, the people that went, like, seemed to have so much fun that I'm guessing some will, you know, jump on a junket and try and get down there because, you know, you'd have to wait till next year if you don't go to this one that's coming up. But, no, it was fun. You'll have a good time.
Yeah, and there was must have been tons of me. Like, everyone in the media seemed to be there. And I was watching the broadcast. Like, this would have pissed me off, too, if I was at the game. Covering the game and working, and I saw Rintel in the crowd, like, standing up, chugging a fucking beer, and I'm up there pounding away on the goddamn provies, knowing that I'm going to be, like, working till 1:30, and this guy's, him and Walker out there having, like, the time of their lives in the crowd. Like, I saw that in the broadcast, and that was the only time where I thought, okay, I'm glad I'm not there, because if I was up in the press box working and had to watch Rintel all game, partying his ass up, I would have been pissed. Man.
And I've heard a few people say, like, playoff time, Like, it will be unbelievable. God. And obviously, they're getting around. I'm not sold. Like, I see where they are in the standings, and I've seen them beat the Canucks twice. But
have you not seen Leipzig? He couldn't make their team.
Yeah,
he couldn't even find a spot for him. The guy's incredible.
But Lucas Spezza is an alternate captain. Their defense has Spezza, Derek England, and Braden McNabb. Like, there's three of the six guys that they use on a regular basis. I think that they're going to be exposed. Playoffs are all about matchups. I think at some point they might get through the first round. I'll be surprised if they get on any sort of prolonged run. Like, the season has been an absolute, like, home run, grand slam. They don't need a playoff run to put them over the top. But that first round, and they're going to have home ice advantage. Like, this rink has this massive plaza out front that's probably 10 times the size of the plaza here at Rogers Arena. Like, in the lead up to game time, it's going to be insane. Like, I'm almost tempted just to buy a ticket to go and just hang out outside T-Mobile when the weather's a little better there and playoff fever hits Vegas, because I think it's just going to be a ton of fun.
I'm telling you, if I see Leipzig, like, he last night alone, he made two of the best non-Vanek plays assists of the season. If I see two more of those in the next 18 games, I'm betting on Vegas to win the state. Like, this is, it's the Leipzig test. If Leipzig is half as good as he looked last night, that team is going to win the Stanley Cup.
You're going to bet on a team that's got Spezza in a game that goes to OT? Like, one of those deep overtimes? Like, there's going to be a turnover. You know, Spezza made a little appearance. He came over to visit the Canuck locker room after the game. I saw him. I was hanging out. He was talking to the training staff. So I didn't get a chance to talk to him myself, because Vegas doesn't skate at the rink on game days. They got their practice facility nearby, but they weren't around in the morning. But looking forward to the Canucks' return visit coming up here in a couple of weeks' time. And it was unfortunate. Like, as I make my way around this league for the first time and see all these buildings, we were in Detroit, and that's brand new. All the bells and whistles there. Vegas is all that and then some. But it just didn't seem right to me to compare and contrast Vegas on a Friday, and then the next game was Glendale on the Sunday. Like, that is, like, we need the sad trombone. That they were sort of both. Bad, they were both, dude. Everything I thought they were going to be.
Dude, that Arizona game looked depressing. I'm not sure. I didn't see a pick of the whole bowl, but, like, the shots that I was seeing watching the game, was that lower than Florida? Is that the lowest attended game that you saw probably this year?
Yeah, I think so, because they had played the night before. So you're asking the fan base to, like, two nights in a row. Like, you know, the Saturday they beat Arizona, or they beat Anaheim, rather, and then the Sunday they lost to the Canucks. But that's a big ask. It's a big ask in any market for fans two nights in a row. That's why the Canucks don't play many games back-to-back here at Rogers Arena. You kind of got to space them out a little bit. They announced, I think, just under 12, but it looked and felt like about half of that. So there was the Florida night, there was the game at Barclays Center against the Islanders, there was the Arizona game. Those are the three that the buildings have been, you know, the emptiest. The crazy part with the schedule is that's the first time the Canucks saw the Coyotes. They got three more games of the final 18,
right?
Three more head-to-head against the Arizona Coyotes.
Would have been nice if they lost that one. I don't think that they can catch. It's almost like watching, like, the upside down playoffs. Like, where are the Canucks going to end up? Can they get worse than Ottawa? I have a hard time believing that the Canucks are going to finish ahead of Ottawa, really. Then there's Buffalo, and then there's Coyote. They had, for a while there, because I think the Coyotes were like 6-1 heading into that game. Like, the Canucks had a legit shot at catching the Utes for last overall, but I think they're 9 points or something like that now. It's just not going to happen.
The one thing I will say is we bring it back to positivity, though.
Right.
That setup in Glendale, and this won't affect too many, although some fans have probably been down for a game there as well. And quite a few, I must say, quite a few people did the two-game weekend where they went to Vegas and either drove or got a cheap flight, and tickets obviously were available. Good seats, good sections were available in Glendale. So there were lots of Canuck fans there as well, Bo Horvat's dad and family. There was like 10 members of the Horvat family that were on that trip, too. But saw lots of people there, but that might be the best hotel rink setup in the National Hockey League.
Oh, yeah.
With the rink and the, like, honestly, it's 10 steps from the hotel front door to the entrance of the rink. It would be nice if there were a few more setups like that around the NHL.
Well, and they got that great entertainment district with lots of bars. That's actually a good trip, man. Like, if you're a Canuck fan, like, that's You want to set something up for next season? You look for that Vegas-Arizona setup? Like, that's... It's not that Vegas to Phoenix isn't that far. Like, that's a doable, fun trip, especially if you get Vegas first. You go all in on the party there, and then you just kind of chill out in that Phoenix scene because it's super convenient. There's a great district all around the rink with, like, you know, restaurants and bars. And, yeah, that's if I were a 20-something Canucks fan, I would be aiming to do that for next season.
Right, and this time of year, spring training going on, Batch, I was mad at him because all of a sudden I saw IG pics of him with his feet up at a baseball game on the Saturday when the Canucks had a quick little workout at the rink, and then the afternoon was free, and he didn't extend the invite, but he was taking his spring. So, like, some people might golf, but some people might go and take in baseball. Yeah. And then you got the hockey as well.
That's a good hockey trip, man. That's a really good hockey trip. People should be all over that.
Yeah, because you could drive. I think it's like a 5-hour drive from Vegas to Phoenix. But if you're in no shape to drive, there's like a 45-minute flight. Right. There's so many cheap flights in the States. So absolutely, I would put that one on the list for next season. All right, let's wrap this thing up with hopefully this is exciting news. And it is. It should be. You and I are taking the podcast on the road next week, next Thursday night. Woody's Pub in Coquitlam on Brunette, which is basically right behind IKEA. When you drive the highway out there, it's pretty central for people in Metro Vancouver. And we're looking for you to come out and be a part of it. We'll do the podcast, but I'll do a little Q&A, talk some hockey on the side as well. I may record one of those world-famous province videos that we've done from time to time. But it's next Thursday night. We'll get the word out on social as well. But we've had some people come down when we've done the on-location ones at Eagle Ridge in the past. But this seems a little more conducive to what we do.
Right.
You know, you can come down, grab a beer, grab a little food, whatever, and hopefully we put on a decent show. But, you know, it's funny. Like, to me, this is the time of the year. Like, the games mean nothing. The results certainly mean nothing. And yet, as you and I have shown here, now we missed last week, but there's more stuff to talk about than ever
right. When
it comes to the podcast. So we'll have some fun next Thursday night, March the 8th, Woody's Pub in Coquitlam on Brunette. So mark it down, and we certainly would love to see people out there to be a part of it.
Yeah, and I think we've seen Beecher came down before. We've seen lots of good questions. I think that I was actually surprised at the good questions we got, the exchange we had after there's a whole post-podcast scene.
The after party.
Right, yeah, where we get to unveil some of the things that we can't necessarily say on the podcast. We try to say everything we can, but there's some stories that we can't always tell. So you do pull back the curtain a little bit. It can be worth your time.
Absolutely. There you go. That's the value added. As if the podcast itself isn't enough,
the post-show.
We pull back the curtain. We invite you to the after party of the podcast. It's where everybody should aspire to be. Podcast is always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. They're proud sponsors of community hockey. Eagle Ridge GM, your one-stop car and truck center, where everyone is a part of their hockey family. All right. Before we run, how are you feeling, Botch? We've been at this for an hour here today. Still positive, the good vibes, everything good. Are you in a good headspace now around the hockey club?
I am. I am feeling. I may even alter my Twitter handle. Like, I'm feeling posit Jason Positford. Like, I'm feeling the vibe, man. I think I'm gonna ride with this. It was like trying on like a new new set of clothes that you never worn before. And then you look at yourself and you're like, fuck, I look pretty good in this, man. So I'm thinking I may stick with it.
Damn, look at Botchard. He looks good. Maybe get a new outfit for the podcast at Woody's next week. We'll have to see. We'll see what you show up in. That is going to do it for us.
Do your Benning in the Jets impression, like, Botch, he looks good. Like, with do your Benning.
Tell me. Tell me.
Good stuff.
Botch, he's a good guy, and he looks sharp. I can't do it, but we should. If Benning and the Jets is, he should come out.
Yeah,
we could have a little side show. You could be our sort of the warm up act, maybe, or right. Get him on the podcast. There you go, the invitation.
Oh, yeah? We've never had like that's a pretty coveted spot. Our first guest. We've offered it to Luongo and BFG, and the third guy is Benning and the Jets.
That's where we are at this point in time. Hey, that's going to do it for this week's podcast from Rogers Arena. For Jason Botcher, Jeff Patterson, thanks so much for listening. You are listening to Province Radio.